Thank you. We're waiting for one more. All right, counsel, are you waiting for any of your clients to join us this morning? We're a little bit early.
We are not, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, then we'll have the marshal call court to session.
Welcome. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Judge Werke, Judge Johnson, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is June 22nd, 2022. We are here for our third of three oral cases on our calendar this morning, A21-1547, Forest Grin versus University of Minnesota Physicians and Deed. Counsel, you'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. I'd ask that you state your name and and identify your client before you begin speaking. The marshal will be showing a running clock of your time. Please keep an eye on that clock. And this matter is being recorded and no other recordings are permitted. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Kyle Edwards, and I am appearing as a certified student attorney under my professor, Peter Knapp. I represent Mr. Andrew Forsgren in this appeal. Mr. Forsgren worked at University of Minnesota Physicians as a physician's assistant. When he was hired on, Mr. Forsgren had a role that involved surgical assistance and light day call duties. When Mr. Forsgren took on additional on-call duties for a temporary period after discussion with his supervisor, he was eventually subjected to a unilateral change by University of Minnesota Physicians into a full-time role as an on-call nurse practitioner. This was a large change in Mr. Forsgren's role at the university. Mr. Forsgren went from working on one side of campus in a planned, slower environment over to moving from East Bank to West Bank of the University of Minnesota in short time periods, beginning on-call emergency care and surgeries and ending long after his schedule ended. Minnesota law requires for an employee to quit for good cause that the change made by the employer is related to the employee's work, that it is adverse to the employee, and that it would compel the reasonable average worker to quit.
Mr. Edwards, the ULJ in this case, I believe, found that your client quit because he knew that he was about to be involuntarily terminated, and he decided that he would rather have his employment record reflect a resignation instead of a termination. Do I have that correct? That's what the ULJ found, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you challenging that finding of fact?
No, Your Honor. We are not challenging the credibility determination by the ULJ regarding the timing of his quit.
It's not just the timing, but it's the reason, right? The ULJ found that's why he quit.
Yes, Your Honor. It is the reasoning for the time. However, before the timing that was put there, Mr. Forsgren did have good cause. The changes were a unilateral change, similar to the ones made in Krantz, that established a good cause reason to quit. The employer, when they threatened the termination to Mr. Forsgren, when his supervisor advised him that the termination was coming, Mr. Forsgren did not have the notice statute is there to address employees' actions, a policy reason, something along the lines of, you can't fire me, I quit. However, here, Mr. Forsgren, the finding is that Mr. Forsgren did not have the agency that the university had here. The university gave him one day to decide told him the timeline for it, and he accepted that timeline.
So where I'm going with my question is, your first two arguments argue about the applicability of two exceptions to the quit rule, good cause, good reason caused by the employer, and medical necessity. But I think you're arguing that your client, that the facts would satisfy the particular requirements of those exceptions. But I'm not convinced that we need to do that analysis and consider the particular requirements, because the ULJ found that the reason for his quit was not the employer's imposition of different requirements or medical necessity. It was the mere fact that he knew he was going to be fired and he wanted to quit instead of being fired.
Yes, Your Honor, that is what we're saying. The credibility determination was regarding the timing of the quit, that Mr. Forsgren quit when he did because of the prompting by the university. I think a similar situation.
Well, again, I think I disagree, and I don't have the language right. I think that district court made a finding that he quit because he knew he was about to be fired, and he found his contrary statements to be not credible. And I think part of the reasons why they weren't credible was both the timing of when it occurred, as well as other statements that he made, such as his questionnaire.
And yes, Your Honor, I would want to point out a similar situation where a worker, Mr. Forsgren, for example, if he had his wages cut in half, and Mr. Forsgren, when he had this unilateral change, that was a change that was adverse to him in a similar way that the wage cut would be. If Mr. Forsgren began looking for work like he did here after the pay cut, the policy of a statute that requires a notice shouldn't punish Mr. Forsgren for beginning to look for work. And then once they gave him that timeline where they said that originally the understanding was 8 weeks and then they moved it to 4 weeks. So it was within 28 days, which put him under the time limit. So Mr. Forsgren had the policy behind the statute doesn't necessarily address a situation like this. So we encourage you to use the good cause.
Are you really arguing that an estoppel defense should apply in this context? And if so, what's the authority to support that argument?
No, Your Honor. We're simply saying that the credibility determination that this court has said that it needs to respect is a determination solely for the choice at the time, for the timing of the resignation.
Yeah, maybe I'm not making my question very clear. So let me try again. I think that I'm hearing you say that the employer induced your client essentially to submit his quit notice so that we don't surpass the 30-day limit in the statute, right? And so I think the argument is that he relied on the employer's suggestion that 4 weeks was fine for notice as opposed to 8 weeks. And therefore that made him ineligible to collect benefits. So are you arguing that the employer, or there should be some sort of estoppel that works with respect to the employer's inducement to submit the quit notice in that 30-day period? And then if so, what's the support for that argument?
Your Honor, I believe that we're making more of a policy argument here. Our view on this is that an employer, once they've created good cause, before the timing issues, before the credibility determinations, once the employer has created good cause, they can't dismiss that good cause purely because of the threat of termination. A threat to terminate, a threat to fire, shouldn't extinguish good cause. So I don't know if that would fall under estoppel, but policy nonetheless.
Can I ask another question? What do we make of the fact that the employer said your July 23 resignation is ineffective? I'm giving it back to you. What is that? What is the legal operation of that fact?
Your Honor, I'm a little confused. Do you mind rewording that?
Oh, he tenders his resignation, says it's effective July 23rd, if I'm not mistaken. That's what it says. And the employer says, no, it's not effective. You're out on July 1. We're going to stop paying you on July 1. So they essentially reject his tender of resignation. What does that mean legally? What is the legal operation of that action?
It's our stance that doesn't necessarily change very much. Mr. Forsgren was faced with a choice of he was told by his supervisor after conversations where he had let them know that he couldn't do this anymore, that he would need to leave the work before he could continue, he couldn't continue. And so when he received notice from his supervisor told him the day before his resignation, the supervisor told him that a termination was incoming, and he slept on that and then accepted that or decided to send in his resignation. And that timing is the credibility determination that we're not challenging here. And after the credibility determination regarding that timing, Mr. Forsgren had, and the ULJ found this on the lower level, there was no real decision for him after the resignation. And so they rejected his resignation. And then the next day he was called in. So I would say that isn't particularly applicable here in Mr. Forsgren's situation. That's it. Regarding our serious mental illness, I just want to serious medical illness. I just want to, before I finish up, reiterate that the adverse changes to Mr. Forsgren were very real for him, and they drove him out of his job. Those same adverse changes drove Mr. Forsgren to leave his initial employment, and the ULJ agreed with that. And so that is good cause here. Within the findings on page 3 of 7, the finding was he would become overwhelmed, angry, stressed, and that it was starting to take a toll on his mental health. So at that point, Mr. Forsgren had good cause, and it was simply the credibility determination on the timing that we're challenging here, not necessarily that there is a credibility determination regarding whether he went through those things. We have nothing more to say. We'll rest.
Is there anything else from the panel? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Ann Froelich, and I represent the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, in this matter. We ask that you affirm the decision of the unemployment law judge as it is legally and factually correct.
I'm sorry, can we stop the clock for a second? I just want to make sure that counsel for the, there we are. Thank you. Can you keep your video on, please? Thank you.
Absolutely. My apologies.
Go ahead, counsel. Thank you.
The unemployment law judge made a finding of fact about the reason that Mr. Forsgren quit. And he quit for one reason and one reason only. That reason is he quit in anticipation of discharge because he expected to be discharged shortly and he didn't want a discharge on his record.
Counsel, I don't disagree with any of that. My concern is that we have an employer who is not contesting the application for benefits and seemingly induced the employee to submit the resignation, within 28 days as opposed to 30 days and taking him outside of 268.095. Subdivision 5D. So what do we make of that? What do we make of that fact? Does that operate as an estoppel?
No. So the law is very clear that there is no equitable or common law in entitlement or denial of unemployment benefits. So we can't consider an estoppel argument. The other piece of this is that this isn't considered an adversarial proceeding. Any unemployment benefits received by the applicant will come directly from the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. Now, the employer in any case may or may not be on the hook to repay some through taxes or all through, if it's a reimbursable employer, of the benefits that were paid from the trust fund to the applicant. But the benefits that the applicant are getting are from the trust fund, not from the employer. And that's the reason that it's not determinative about whether or not the employer contests or in some cases even supports an applicant getting benefits.
And I also asked what do we make of the fact that the employer essentially said, we're not honoring your resignation notice, we're not honoring your 28-day notice, we're giving it back to you. What do we make of that fact?
So in this case, that tends to show, then we move to the analysis of whether there is a quit. It's undisputed that the applicant quit. And then the law tells us what to do when the employer doesn't honor that quit notice. Then we look at whether the discharge is within 30 days of the intended quit date and apply the law accordingly. Your question makes me think that there seems to be an unfairness or an inducement in this case. And that may or may not be true, but the law doesn't allow for us to adjust for that. The law is specific about how to handle this particular type of case. There's no dispute here that he was discharged within 30 days of the intended quit date, and therefore we have to apply the law accordingly. So in here, he has a discharge date effective July 1st. He's eligible on the discharge because it's not due to employment misconduct. Then there's a quit on effective July 23rd. He's not eligible because of the quit, because he quit solely due to the impending discharge.
Can you help me understand or figure out the consequences if it had been otherwise? I mean, if he had given notice that was 8 weeks in the future, mm-hmm. Then what would have happened? Then how would that analysis have gone?
So if on June 24th, he gave notice that his quit was effective July 23rd. So let's say on June 24th, it was August 23rd, if that works for this hypothetical.
Good.
So if he did that, and then on June 25th, the same thing happened. He was told, you're done today, we'll pay you till July 1st. In that case, July 1st is the discharge date, August 23rd is the quit date. August 23rd is more than 30 days from July 1st. Therefore, the quit would be meaningless in terms of unemployment. It would just be a discharge effective July 1st.
And then he would get no benefits.
Then he would get benefits because he's eligible for benefits based on the discharge.
Oh, benefits for how long?
Until something else affected his eligibility.
I'm sorry. I'm referring back to the hypothetical. If he had specified a last day in August, 8 weeks into the future, mm-hmm. then for how long would he have been eligible for
that August quit is meaningless in terms of unemployment. It has no application to the analysis. If he quit in August, he was only discharged for purposes of unemployment insurance benefits. And so then we'd just be looking at a whether or not this is employment misconduct case. There would be no further analysis.
It'd be a quit case only.
Discharge.
I'm sorry, a discharge. Discharge
yes.
only.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if he had specified a last day that was only 2 weeks into the future, then what?
So if he had said on June 24th, I'm giving you 2 weeks notice, and on June 25th, they discharged him, then he would be eligible from June 25th until the Sunday before the week his quit was intended to be effective.
He would have been eligible for some benefits, but less than what he got.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So I also want to address the argument on the timing. The unemployment law judge's finding of fact says that Forsgren quit his employment effective July 23rd, 2021, because he anticipated being discharged and did not want this to reflect negatively on his employment record. That's on page 4 of the decision. And then just below that, in the credibility analysis, it says, however, Forsgren's claim that he quit the employment because of his requirement to handle day calls once per week for the orthopedic department was not credible. This isn't a timing argument. The unemployment law judge says there's only one reason for the separation, for the quit, and that is in anticipation of discharge. The ULJ is being very clear that day call, the increase in day call and the medical necessity, the alleged medical necessity, were not part of the reasons he quit. And if they're not disputing the credibility analysis, then the only thing left for this court to analyze is whether quitting in anticipation of discharge is a reason that would entitle Mr. Forsgren to eligibility. And this court has repeatedly held in other cases that quitting in anticipation of discharge, even for the purpose of protecting an employment record, is not a good reason caused by the employer for quitting and doesn't entitle an applicant to eligibility under any of the other exceptions. Mr. Forsgren's also argued that this is good cause because there was a change in his job duties. And I want to talk a little bit about Krantz v. Lockster Camp Transport, because in that case, the court really relied on the fact that there wasn't a promise. There was an agreement that was breached. And in this case, there's no evidence that there was a promise. Mr. Forsgren's testimony is that he was, quote, under the impression that it was something that would be an occasional, like, I believe the exact statement I've written down is a very occasional for duty for my position. And that's on the 21st page of the transcript. This is an instance where Mr. Forsgren was told what the job duties were. He agreed to those job duties, but there's no indication that there was any negotiation. There's no indication that there was any agreement. This is not a breach of contract case. And as far as quit medical goes, again, the evidence that the ULJ found is that at the time of the quit, he did not quit due to his medical condition. He did not quit due to the increase in day call duties. He solely quit because he was afraid of being discharged. If there are no more questions, we ask that this court affirm the decision of the unemployment law judge, as the record clearly supports the finding of fact that Mr. Forsgren quit solely in anticipation of discharge. Thank you.
I have a follow-up question about the issue of his giving 4 weeks notice. I think he testified that he chose 4 weeks because the university had a preference for that. And can you tell me more about the factual record? Did the university have was that true? Did the university have a preference for 4 weeks? And if so, was that a generally applicable preference, or was it something that was communicated directly to him? And if so, was it communicated to him during the same period of time or during some other period?
The record isn't incredibly clear on this point. It sounds like the university generally preferred an 8-week notice period, and that if you didn't give sufficient notice, it could affect your ability to be rehired in the future. My understanding of the record is that it sounds like he was granted permission for a shorter period, the 4-week period, and as so long as he gave this 4-week quit notice, it wouldn't negatively impact future employment for him. But I'm not sure this matters, the 4 weeks versus the 8 weeks, and what the university preferred. I think this is a bit of a red herring because the law is very clear about, you know, it's got to be within 30 days. And the facts as we have them are in this case are that his discharge was within 30 days of his intended end date.
And that 4-week alternative was offered to him when, do you know?
I'm not clear on when that conversation occurred.
Thanks.
All right. Anything else from the panel this morning? All right. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. And you are muted there.
Thank you. Regarding some of the statements, findings of fact, it was on page 25 of the transcript. There was a conversation. He was doing very minimal when he started, and then he filled in for a coworker leaving on maternal leave. And then after that, as the transcript reads, Mr. Forsgren had a sit down with his supervisor, the same one that told him he was going to be terminated a couple weeks later, I believe the transcript reflects. He, quote, "At this point, at this, I told my manager I could not do that, that I could not do regular day call. I had only anticipated it doing it 3 months regularly. I told him I can't do any more of that." Mr. Forsgren, Mr. Forsgren did everything he could. He submitted the resignation when he was encouraged to, compared to a standard 8 week. He made his employer aware from the start straight to the end that this was something that he couldn't do because of his mental health. And because of this, we request that the court reverses the decision below, grants Mr. Forsgren's unemployment benefits. Thank you very much.
All right. Anything else from the panel this morning? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted and we will issue an opinion within our